Hello, everyone. I'm Erica. I have been a member of Brightway for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. I took Chukai a couple of years ago, and I know that Bruce was originally going to give this precept talk. So, Bruce, I'm sorry that we won't be hearing from you. I'm sure you would do this much better justice than I will, but I'll do my best. So in an effort to gather all of my thoughts, I decided to make a Google presentation. So I hope that I do not bore you with it. Let me see. Where did it go? There we go. Okay. So, can everybody see this? The do not defame the three treasures. Okay, thank you. As you know, this is our very last precept that we get to talk about. And at first I didn't really understand what this thing was about, why it would come at the end. But then the more I dug into it, I started to realize that there's actually a really good reason for it. I feel like this, I could call this sort of the disclaimer precept because it's kind of saying, like, well, okay, we've given you all these precepts, but they may not be enough. I'm going to be talking some about that and, just what exactly the three treasures are and how this precept can apply in our life. So just a refresher, what it says in the Kyojikeimon is do not defame the three treasures, respect the Buddha, unfold the Dharma, nourish the Sangha. So the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha are the three treasures. And then it goes on to say, in the realm of the one, holding no concept of ordinary beings and sages is the precept of not defaming the three treasures. To do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world. And the merit of this becomes the source of all wisdom. Criticize nothing except everything.
Does anybody know how to make the Google slide like full screen? So it's like a slideshow, so it's
Is
bigger.
that a slide program?
Yeah, is it? But it's the
There
Google.
should
It's
click
Google Slides.
the four squares, maybe. I figured out how to, someone showed me how to do it when I was doing mine.
Okay.
And we figured it out. I think maybe the four
Four
or the
squares.
upper right, the kebab on the upper
These
right,
three
those three.
squares.
Try those and see if there's a full screen
I think that that's
or
but the that's
presentation
the
mode.
browser, not the.
Hey, click the four squares on the other side under the back arrow.
Oh, the on the other side. Okay. No.
Oh, that's not it either.
Oh well.
Can you right
Is it the
click
one
on
down the
something?
bottom?
Maybe down here.
Sorry. I'm so
Okay, that's
sorry.
all right. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a
Exit full screen? No.
no, because
Should be
then okay.
slideshow.
Yeah, there's a
On
present.
the bottom left, there's a little four squares.
The bottom left.
Far corner there on the left.
Keep going left,
Under the
left.
six.
Underneath your slides.
Down one more. Down a little bit more. Four squares.
There's no.
I'm sorry. Maybe
There's
my
no four
computer
squares
glasses
on
for this
our.
one.
Oh,
Yeah, it
interesting.
might be like
Ah,
large.
well, there's
Yeah.
a
Okay,
hide film
I think you did
strip.
it.
But that didn't really make it any
No,
bit
it's
bigger.
not as stiff away the other.
I just
Oh,
hit
well,
this
that's
thing.
great. Oh, well.
Okay. Sorry.
Nobody knows how to use
I
Microsoft,
am
but
a
here's
lot
my
more
tip.
familiar with PowerPoint than I am with Google presentation or whatever this is. What does defame mean? That was something I was not completely clear on when I started looking at this. So the dictionary definition is to damage the good reputation of someone or something, to slander or libel. So obviously, I don't think that most of us are going around saying like, the Buddha sucks and, I hate the Dharma and my Sangha sucks. Like nobody is saying that. So, what exactly does that mean? Just to back up a little bit. So this is from something called the Harvard University Pluralism Project, and they talk about the three treasures in the Buddhist tradition. So the three treasures are not just something that we do in Zen. This is a core of every kind of Buddhism. So throughout the Buddhist world, as it says, Buddhists have these three treasures in common. To be a Buddhist means to take refuge in the three treasures. And so I thought that that was kind of lovely that no matter where you go in the world, if somebody is a Buddhist, you have this in common with them. So it goes on to say a Sri Lankan Theravada Buddhist might insist that the Buddha was a human pathfinder, nothing more. A Chinese Pure Land Buddhist might chant the name of Amitabha Buddha, seen as the eternal Buddha of infinite light, with a prayer to be reborn in the Pure Land after death. And a Japanese Zen master might shock one with the words, "If you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him." In recognition that grasping for the security of the Buddha creates as much suffering as any other desire that we may have. So even though we want to follow the Buddha, we have to constantly let go of what our concept of the Buddha is, or just to recognize that what we think it is may not be right or accurate. So, I like how Domyo always talks about big R and little r, reality with a big R and reality with a little r. And so I feel like the three treasures, well, I guess it would be the big T, the big T and the little t. I'll change that. So the literal is Shakyamuni Buddha, and the literal Dharma are the Dharma teachings of the Buddha. The literal Sangha is the Sangha community, those of us who put these teachings into practice. But then there's also the big T, the ultimate reality, which is, the oneness of what we all are as Buddha. Dharma is the manyness of everything, and the Sangha is the harmony of the two. This is according to Nancy Rachel Baker in her book, Opening to Oneness, which is one of our books that we read when we study the precepts. So in it, she's saying we are the three treasures, all of us are. And everything around us, everything that we experience, preaches us the three treasures if we're paying attention to it. So I just wanted to read a couple of excerpts from her chapter about this precept, which she calls non-abusing the three treasures. So she says, these treasures, or jewels, as they are sometimes called, can be understood in several different ways. For example, in what we might think of as a literal way, the Buddha being Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived a couple of thousand years ago, the Dharma being his teachings, and the Sangha being the community of disciples who put those teachings into practice. But they are also understood by Buddhism to be the three main aspects of ultimate reality: Buddha, the oneness; Dharma, the manyness; and Sangha, the harmony or identity of the two. She also says the important thing, especially in considering the precepts from Bodhidharma's and Dogen's oneness point of view, is that we are the three treasures. They are not just some set of truths and teachings out there for us to take refuge in and maybe avoid conceptualizing. In the Jukai ceremony of receiving the precepts, which we will have on Sunday, Just before the actual precepts are given, the preceptor says to the recipient, "Next you will reveal yourself as the three treasures. When once you reveal yourself as the three treasures, all virtues and merits will be in complete realization." Then the preceptor says, "Be one with Buddha." And the recipient responds, "Being one with Buddha." And then the same for Dharma and Sangha. This is repeated three times with each of them. Since we are the three treasures, we take refuge not in the three treasures, but as the three treasures. In a sense, then, we are taking refuge in ourselves. And I just wanted to read one other paragraph that she had that I really liked in her chapter. Dogen often reminds us that human verbal oral expression isn't the only kind. In fact, as it is said in Zen, everything preaches the Dharma. And of course, preaching here is expressing, which means no separation. This means the actual body, namely the entire universe, is both expressing the three treasures and is an expression of the three treasures. It is constantly giving a teisho, which is a talk. We not only hear this preaching, we are it. Like the harbor and weir, a refuge for boats and fish, this teisho is our refuge. It is the three treasures which we both are and in which we take refuge. Its virtue finds its home in the ocean of essential nature. This is a mystery. There is no binding here, nothing conceptual. It is beyond explanation. In a state of not knowing, we just accept it with respect and gratitude. In that state, the precepts arise spontaneously. So that is her take on it. I was also really intrigued by this idea of what does it mean to take refuge? So, you know, I feel like in life, all of us want to take refuge, right? And that means something different to everybody, but a true refuge is spiritual. It's not physical. So I'm just going to be one quick excerpt from this book, which is called The Lotus Still Blooms. And this is a really great book about Buddhist teachings for the Western mind. And so it covers things like, you know, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, and it has a section on the Three Jewels. So what this author, Joan Gattuso, has to say is, the concept of refuge was very prominent in ancient Hawaiian culture. On each island of the Hawaiian chain, there was a place of safe haven called the City of Refuge. Here a warrior who was being pursued for whatever reason could go and seek refuge. Once inside, he or she would be safe and free from authorities. It was a sacred place that gave refuge to all who entered. In Buddhism, refuge takes the form of the three jewels rather than being a physical location. When we fully understand the concept of refuge, we realize we need to take refuge daily, as the Buddhists teach. We all face challenges, those painful times when we are experiencing a great loss through illness or death or troubles at work or within the family, for example. At such times, our souls, our psyches need to find a place of solace, somewhere to go, be it physically or mentally, where we can rest and be renewed. A true place of refuge must be spiritually based, not worldly based. We cannot authentically say, "I take refuge in the refrigerator and the goodies therein," or "I take refuge in my expensive shoes." These worldly things may give temporary pleasure, but they cannot give refuge. So, you know, this idea of how we can't actually create this refuge on Earth. It's not a physical place. Made me think a lot about a place that I had gone to in Central California. I don't know if anyone recognizes this picture, but this is from Hearst Castle. So this is in Central California, and it's now open to the public. Anybody can go there, but it was built in the building started in 1919, and they just kept building it up until 1947. So for 28 years, they built this incredible,
Designed by a woman,
yes,
the
a
architect.
female architect.
Say that.
Yes, a female architect designed Hearst Castle, and it was commissioned by a man named William Randolph Hearst, who anyone who's studied journalism has heard of because he's pretty much the father of what they call yellow journalism. Sensationalism, just completely, sometimes outright making things up. And just ignoring real news for the sake of like fluffy stuff that doesn't really matter so much. And so, at the time, this really wasn't done. And, the journalism community really did not like this guy. And of course, he became extremely wealthy because the public just ate this up. They absolutely loved all of these dirty, salacious things that his newspapers printed. They did not care if it was made up. And so he took his money and he decided to build basically this refuge for himself. And it was, yeah, if you've ever been there, it's very striking because it's built like basically on a hill in a way that should architecturally not even be possible. It's just like so crazy. And yes, he had this female architect. It's built on columns. I mean, it's the most bizarre and unnecessary building I've ever seen. Like, it's just, there's no reason for anyone to build it, to have it exist where it does. It's so remote and hard to get to. And basically, this guy just did it because that's what he felt like doing. He felt like this was going to be his refuge. In addition, he was based in New York and he built this place in California. At the same time, he started to have an affair. He was a married man with children, started to have an affair. And so he left his family in New York and lived with his mistress in this gaudy place. And I remember visiting and thinking, it's just such a strange place. It has some stuff like this bathhouse that's so beautiful, and other stuff looks completely random and nonsensical. And he died about 4 years after they stopped building there. And the mistress had no claim over it. The family didn't want it. And so it just reverted to the state of California. And so I just thought, like, what was the point of doing this? Like, spending all this time building this crazy place that, he basically left because he was just old and in poor health, and then nobody even inherited it. It just kind of went back into the world. And so, this whole story of Hearst. He was sort of immortalized in this film called Citizen Kane. And so I don't know if I can successfully share my screen, but I wanted to show a really short clip from Citizen Kane. So if you haven't seen this movie or if it's been a really long time, great.
Hit the square at the far right on your computer and it should make it full screen. The broken square on the block.
On the black screen.
Under YouTube.
Oh, this?
No.
Nope.
Can you just come do
In the middle of the
it?
screen.
Where is? Oh, thank you. Yeah, of course. Oh. So anyway, if you haven't seen this movie or it's been a long time, basically, there's this eccentric guy. His name is Kane, and he's very rich. He does all these things, but he's very lonely. And at the end of it, and he keeps pining for something called Rosebud, and nobody knows what that is. I have no idea. And this man has like everything in the world he could possibly want. And then at the end of this movie, he dies, and they're going through his stuff. And so this is this scene at the end when they're going through his stuff, and Kane is dying.
That Rosebud meant, I bet that would have explained everything.
No, I don't think so. No. Mr. Kane was a man who got everything he wanted and then lost it. Maybe Rosebud was something he couldn't get or something he lost. Anyway, it wouldn't have explained anything. I don't think any word can explain a man's life. No, I guess Rosebud is just a piece in a jigsaw puzzle. Missing piece. Well, come on, everybody. Miss the train.
You get the idea. Not very subtle. But so basically it's just this idea that his what this was just a little sled that he had had from his childhood, and it kind of just symbolized his lost innocence, and his mother's love is basically what it symbolized. And those were the intangibles, like of all the stuff that he had, all of it was essentially meaningless to him.
Excuse me, something happened to the volume.
Oh.
You have to go to the top left where it says YouTube because the cane is writing in the background, so it's using your volume up. Up at the top, red button. Close that one.
Okay. Close it down. China. Okay, is that any better? Can you guys hear me okay now? Okay, sorry about that. All right. So this is a quote from Robert Aitken. He wrote a book called The Mind of Clover, which is another one of our recommended precept study books. I don't know if this quote is actually from Mind of Clover. I just found it online. But he's talking here about the part of the precept where it says there are no ordinary beings or sages. So here he says, there is no ordinary being or sage, no leader and follower, no Roshi and student. Not defaming the three treasures is a matter of finding them in your heart and mind. That which is clung to is not Buddha, just as you cannot cling to non-attachment. What you cling to is the memory of an experience that you once had. Once you attach to it, it is not non-attachment anymore. So, sometimes it's one of these things where we're like, how do you not cling to non-attachment, you know? But again, he's saying here that true non-attachment means that you let go of all attachments, including the notion of non-attachment itself. So I think what it's saying is like, there's no way for us to truly not attach, right? And you have to just be okay with that and understand that that is just another concept in and of itself. So I also wanted to share a little bit about what the Dharma Rain study guide says about this particular precept. Again, if you go to the precept section, you can find the Dharma Rain study guide, which has all of the precepts in it. So they kind of present it as like a conversation about the precept. And so for each particular section, I kind of broke it down. So in terms of in the realm of the one holding no concept of ordinary beings and sages, it's a precept of not defaming the three treasures. So what they say is if we put sages in a place above and separate from ordinary beings, we cut the Buddha body into two pieces. So this is true regardless of the camp to which we assign ourselves, even if we believe that we're ordinary, we're still cutting ourselves off. To do something by ourselves without copying others is to become an example to the world, and the merit of this becomes the source of all wisdom. So here they're saying to do something by ourselves without copying others means that we shouldn't just mimic what we think the precepts are telling us to do. Instead of, we have to be deeply authentic, be ourselves completely, nothing more and nothing less than that. Because I, excuse me, was a little confused by that. I was like, how do I do something without having a frame of reference from somebody else, you know, and probably copying them? But I, again, I think what it's saying is like, we have to express these the way only we are able to express them, you know, the way we embody the precepts might look different than the way somebody else does. And again, they say to do something by yourself means you cannot just follow the letter of the law. You cannot rely on an exact or preconceived idea of what right action is. You cannot even copy yourself. And then at the end of this precept where it says, criticize nothing except everything, the Dharma Rain study guide says, Dogen says that to really establish practice, turn the stream of compassion within. Accepting mind becomes real when it includes ourselves. Whether we can accept our own shortcomings, when we can accept our own shortcomings in a gentle, tolerant way. Otherwise, there's something not quite authentic. And I know for a lot of us, I mean, me included, accepting my own shortcomings is like really difficult. And so I think that is the challenge of this precept is being able to see yourself as somebody who is no different from a sage or any other ordinary being or anybody, that we're all together in this. So the Dharma Rain study guide also says, Dogen says, when we wish to teach and enlighten all things by ourselves, we are deluded. When all things teach and enlighten us, we are enlightened. So the idea is to turn this outward, to stop thinking like, well, I have the answers and I'm going to tell you how things should be, and instead to look at what life can teach us. That being said, we may not get all the answers or the answers that we want to hear from our teachers or from our texts. And Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha aren't even elevated, even though we take refuge in them. They appear to be cut off from ordinary beings when they are seen as either higher or lower entities, and that is not truthful. So obviously there's like a million ways you could take this precept or any of the precepts. You know, another book that we reference sometimes is the Diane Rizzetto book, Waking Up to What You Do. And her take on the precepts is kind of interesting, because instead of saying, you know, not lying or not stealing, she makes it positive, like do this, do that. And in her book, this precept is called taking up the way of supporting life. So that is another way to look at it. I'm not going to present on that. It gets into some thornier issues like suicide and abortion and war, and I'm just like not ready to talk about that. But just in case you are interested in that interpretation, then do look at her book. So Dromio also has a podcast where she talks about this particular precept. It's podcast 3 of her 10 fields of precepts, or that's what the link says. So in her talk, she's saying that you may feel dissatisfied with the three treasures once you've taken refuge in them. That's why I call this like the disclaimer precept. Like, just be careful before you take refuge, because, you know, this is not going to solve all of your problems. And although the three treasures are inevitably encountered through imperfect human beings, communities, and institutions, you still depend on them for your spiritual well-being and your development. So that's sort of like that, it's, I don't know, it's two sides of the same coin, right? And while it is valuable to look for teachings that you resonate with and teachers and community you trust, like this one, ultimately, if you want to experience the depth of Zen practice, you have to settle down, stop dwelling on deficiencies in the three treasures, and resolve the koan within yourself. So, you know, we kind of live with this inherent contradiction, no matter what philosophy or religion we follow. We're trying to grasp what's ultimately ungraspable. We're trying to use human means to understand the celestial. And so I think that that's what she's getting at here, is just understanding that, you know, this can be a guide for your life, but it's still just, it's part of your life. It's not like the be all and end all that's going to answer everything. So, you know, I, a lot of the texts that I was reading were saying that, you know, this precept is about not denying the Buddha within yourself or in other people. And that really, to work with this, you have to start with self-compassion. So the Buddha is quoted as saying, you can search the whole tenfold universe and not find a single being more worthy of love and compassion than the one seated here, yourself. Yeah. I don't remember where I got this, because this is really nice. We have to begin to sense the tears for ourselves before we can cry for others. So I just wanted to share like a little bit of a personal story. I think a lot of you know. So I have a genetic hearing loss. I developed it probably when I was about 5. And, you know, I later looked up the statistical likelihood of that happening, and it's about 1 in 1,000. So it's not very common. And, you know, when I was little, to moderate hearing loss. So we meant that in like a normal, you know, conversational setting without a lot of background noise, I heard everything fine. But, you know, somebody talking behind me, no. And it was a teacher who said in kindergarten, who said, or no, preschool, who said to my parents, I think you should have her hearing checked. And so, you know, I got hearing aids the week before I started kindergarten, which was not a great time to try to adjust to new sounds. And then when I got to elementary school, they gave me an IEP, and they just decided they were going to do all this stuff that they do for deaf kids, even though I wasn't deaf. So they were like, teaching me sign language. I'm like, who am I gonna speak this with? I don't know anybody who's deaf. Who am I gonna talk to that's deaf? And they did do some things that were actually quite helpful. Like they had me sit at the front of the class. Only issue with that is when the teacher is talking and calling on people and somebody was behind me, then, you know, sometimes I didn't hear their response, and then I would answer, and I would answer the same thing, and then everybody thought that was super funny, that I hadn't heard it. But then they also gave me this thing called an auditory trainer, and it was like this big thing I had to wear. It was like a microphone thing, and then the teacher would wear one too. I mean, it's not that dissimilar to this. And so she would literally be standing right here, like this far from me. And the sound of her voice is like blaring into my ears. And I'm like, she's right there next to me. Like, why do I have to wear this thing? And I kept fighting the teachers on this. I was like, I don't need this. I don't want to wear it. I don't need it. And, you know, my grades were good, but I guess I was just, you know, nobody was going to listen to me. And so then finally in sixth grade, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to middle school and doing this. I was like, test me. So give me a test. If I do badly on this test, I will keep doing it. And so they gave me a test. They tested how well I could read in sixth grade, and the results came back and they said, you read at a 12th grade reading level. So we're gonna stop doing this. And my only point in telling the story is I just wish somebody had seen me for me, you know, had said like, what does this girl actually need? How is this girl doing? How much help does she require? Why don't we listen to what she has to say? But, you know, I wasn't given that. And it really affected my self-esteem profoundly for years and years and years of just thinking like, well, I guess I must really be really terrible at like everything because I need all this help, you know, even though I don't think I do. And it really wasn't until I came to Zen where I started to feel like, yeah, I'm not perfect. So what? You know, like, yeah, there's some things I'm not going to hear well. There's some things I wish I could do. I can't, but it doesn't make me any less, you know, worthy of being here in this Sangha, you know, and I have really felt that here in the Sangha. So I just want to say thank you to all of you guys for that. And I just like one other quick thing. Oh my God, it's so late. One other quick thing was, so I went to Sishin and I got there halfway through it. And so when we would sit at the tables to eat, you know, I seated like at the end of the table because everybody else had their places already. And then I guess maybe Domyo and Mark, the Shusho, had a conversation. And then suddenly I was like taken to the front of the table. Excuse me. And, you know, of course, it's a silent retreat, so I can't ask why. they did this. And I realized, I was like, they probably did this just to be really considerate of me so that when they gave instructions and stuff, I would be really close by. And instead of being grateful, I spent several minutes feeling really angry. I felt really angry. And I was like, they think, why would they do that? And I felt embarrassed. And I even thought, and I'm sorry if this offends anyone, I thought they must think I'm retarded. And I thought, and I realized, I was like, that's not even my voice in my head saying these things. This is the voice of all those kids that said stuff like that when I was little. And I was like, I'm 45 years old. Why are they still in my head? Why can't I not let this go? And I also realized it probably wasn't even a big deal to Domio Mark. I'm sure they weren't like, oh gosh, Erica, what are we gonna do with her? Like, it probably was just like a nice thing, and they didn't think much beyond that. And I was like, I'm just still trying to get used to having people be considerate of me. And this is part of what I love about the Buddhist community is that we actually do this for each other, and it's not a big deal. So, yeah. So I just, again, wanted to come back to this idea of self-compassion. This is what Jack Kornfield has to say on self-compassion. Be gentle with yourself. It should not be a struggle. Know your limitations. Extend your compassion only as far as you feel your heart opening naturally. Plant your seed of trust. It will grow in its season. As you face loss, frustration, hurt, and conflict, invite a sense of your own dignity. Sit up, stand up tall. Have respect for yourself and patience and compassion. With these, you can handle anything. So I guess we only have like 11 minutes left. So I'm just going to keep this as like a large group discussion, but I wanted to do the question. And I mean, you don't have to answer this if there's anything else you wanted to mention, but I thought the question could be, how can we not deny the Buddha within ourselves or others? So, yeah.
Will you stop sharing so we can see it?
Oh, yes. No, nice.
I'll start it.
Come on up.
Well, hi, I'm Eric. This really hit home for me because when I first started listening to Domio's podcasts, and this is really what I was struggling with. And I remember I was in Charlotte, and I had been listening to her podcast like just one after the other, and I was on the cloud Zendo. And I decided after I got off to, because Domio said on the podcast, I'll never forget it, the practice is the enlightenment. The practice is the enlightenment. And it hit me for the first time after sitting Zazen and listening to the Dharma talk or whatever, that if we don't practice love, compassion, metta, whatever you call it, to ourselves, we really are just throwing paper in the wind when we try to love and show each other. And showing love and compassion to others has been my, lifelong mission since I was a child. And I realized that if I did not take the time to practice it, that I would never be able to truly show it. I would just constantly, not just throwing paper, but I could even, be doing harm or, hurting or not being effective in my gift of love. And so I was like, well, and I had to argue with myself because I had those kids in my head, telling me all the same things. And I don't know if you remember or not, but when I first came here a year ago, I was sitting over around where Domio is now, and I just started breaking down
And I was crying during the talk. And it was because all those voices had gotten so loud. And I was like, you know, you're never going to be accepted. You're never going to be loved. You're just going to be this weirdo that, you know, everyone just puts up with at best and wants to be away from at worst. And I had been able to love myself in spite of those voices. And I had so many people here that had shown me that and had helped me practice that self-love that I just started crying because I had that. And so I think this was a wonderful talk, but I love that you said it's the disclaimer precept, because all the other stuff we do, if we don't do it within, you know, then it's just performance. It's just learning words and rituals and things like that. It has to be applied within and practiced within. And so I just wanted to kind of share that and thank you.
Yeah,
And
thank
that,
you.
that's how I don't deny the Buddha, is I practice compassion to myself.
Good.
So
Good for you. Jinryu?
I'll try to be quick. First of all, thank you so much for this wonderful talk and for your personal story. And since you have shared yours, I will share that at this session, I'm over 70 and I've been here 14, 15 years. And for the first time ever, I was able to realize that all of the people who raised me as I was growing up were probably wrong. They're not telling the truth. They didn't know. And I'm not saying they didn't know to feel sorry for them. I do feel sorry for them. But what I'm saying is, I shouldn't be believing them. I don't need to believe them anymore. And it was such a revelation. And you know, it took as long as it took. But that's why I started crying at session and I could not stop. And I'm crying again. The other thing I wanted to tell you is, did they ever tell you why they moved you? Because I know why they moved you.
I actually didn't ask why they moved me. I just assumed. Why did they move me?
It's because they wanted you to have someone in front and on each side that you could
Oh,
watch do
see, and
it.
see, this is what we do, right? I like turned it into this whole thing that it was nothing about. So because that's what humans do.
What was it, Henry? They want
It's just
when, yeah, when anybody is new, they try to put the newer people surrounded by people who have been here a while so that you can watch people do Oriyogi.
yeah, so that was why. But I had gone from the very end of the table to the very front of the table where I'd be right next to Donyo Mark. So I was like, damn it, I know they moved me. Probably thought I can't hear. I hate that. And I was just like inventing this whole story and I thought it clearly was not true. So thank you for telling me
Thank
that.
you for a wonderful talk.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, Jade, yes.
Oh, sorry. Thank you for the talk.
Yeah.
Something Eric was saying reminded me of a book I read called The Gifts of Imperfection. It's by a shame researcher. I forget their name. Thank you. Someone said it. Yeah.
Renee Brown.
Renee Brown. There we go. You know, people talking about that little voice, right, that gets in the way of self-love and self-compassion, the little, you know, the things the kids said back in grade school, right? You know, the voice is shame, right? And it's different from guilt, which is, hey, I've done something bad. Shame is I am bad. It has no utility whatsoever. And the only way to process it is to talk about it with other people. It's the only way. You can't solve it on your own. It's a swamp. You can't. You need someone else to help you through it. And you have to be careful about who you talk to. You know, it's got to be people you trust, people who won't get caught up in their own shame. It's got to be, you know, your community, family.
Oh, I love that. And it's true. I mean, shame is different from guilt. You know, like I feel like so many of us, we've We're profoundly affected by things that we've never had any control over, you know, and like in the case of that, and for me, and yeah, I can't feel guilty about it.
Wow.
You see,
But
okay.
okay.
So,
I can't feel guilty about it because I didn't cause it, but I still feel shame anyway.
right.
So
Thank you.
thank you, Jay.
Makes sense.
Oh, go ahead, Isaac.
Turn it off, but it doesn't want to behave, so. Thank you for this talk. It was very much what I needed to hear tonight.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the Citizen Kane was actually very appropriate for something I'm going through right now, and I'm not going to get into details. We're kind of short on time, so. But yeah, the whole Rosebud thing, had a traumatic experience with my mom at a very young age, and it's been a real hard thing for me to reconcile. And it's been part of what I've been using to keep myself out of like connecting with Buddha nature, so and self-compassion.
Yeah.
So I've had some pretty big opening around that with the session and some
Good.
current things going on. But anyways, I just wanted to thank you for your
Of
talk.
course, thank you. Yes, the shin brings up a lot of things, obviously, for a lot of people, and yeah, it can bring up stuff that you haven't thought about in decades, like that for me, like these little voices where I was like, that's not even my voice. Whose voice is this? You know? So yeah. Go
Say
ahead.
something. I know we don't have a lot of time.
That's okay.
So actually, Eric and I were talking about something similar to this, about how we tend not to listen to our inner voices and our inner wisdom. And the best way I could explain it is through psychedelics. It's been an incredibly healing journey for me. And I talk a lot, but when I have done psychedelics in the past, I hear voices in my head and they say very little, which is very different for me, but it's all me.
Wow.
It's me talking to me and telling me I am a good person and telling me the things that I, it doesn't matter what anybody says to me, it has to come from me. And I guess the point is that we don't listen to ourselves. We don't listen to our inner wisdom and we don't listen to our inner Buddhas. And it's in there. We just have to pay attention.
I do. Yeah. Well, thank you, guys. We are at time. So I will go ahead and close. We dedicate the merit of this Dharma talk to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna, Paramita. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much, Erica.
Thank you,
Yeah,
Erica.
you're welcome. Thank you, guys.